Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the After Show with Mike and Kelly. I'm Mike, and I'm joined by, guess who? Kelly. Shocking, I know. We thought we'd shake it up for this week's episode.
Yeah.
We are recording. It is Monday, February 1st. Happy pre-Groundhog Day, Kelly.
And to you.
I was at a party this weekend which was Groundhog Day themed, where we actually watched the movie Groundhog Day.
Oh my gosh.
And I'll tell you, the best part for me was that at the beginning of the film, there's a short scene where Phil Connors, the weatherman, mm-hmm. From Channel 9 Pittsburgh, is talking with a member of the broadcast staff at the station before he heads out to Punxsutawney to get trapped in his time loop.
Yes.
And he's chatting with this nebbishy young man who is looking forward to possibly subbing in for Phil while he's gone. And I look closely. I say, wait a minute. Is that? And I went and I grabbed my my teenager, who is a huge fan of the show White Collar.
Yes.
And
huge is an understatement.
She is a huge fan of the show White Collar. And I pointed at the nebbishy assistant weatherman and I said, sweetie, who's that? And she said, I don't know. And then I played it and she heard him speak. She said, oh my God.
Yes.
It's Mozzie, otherwise
yes!
as Willie Garson. Willie Garson, the actor known for his work on Sex and the City as Sanford, and in White Collar as Mozzie, plays the dude. He plays that weatherman in the movie Groundhog Day, and my daughter was beside herself.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
She was beside herself. She was so, so, so excited.
Yeah.
So anyway, she was enthusiastic. That was fun for me. I love that movie. I'm a big fan of the movie. And today, a friend of mine posted on Facebook that the New York Public Library, in honor of Groundhog Day, has released a collection of wildlife drawings, open source, copyright free wildlife drawings of viviparous quadrupeds in honor of Groundhog Day.
Yes.
So you can check that out. That's at digitalcollections.nypl.org.
That's amazing.
We will put it in the show notes. So yeah. So that was what was going on here. What's going on by you?
Do you ever have deja vu, Mrs. Lancaster?
And what would you say? Would you say you'd be departing today? Chance of departure today? 80%.
For some reason, that was the line that just, I laughed and laughed. So for people who are familiar with the film, do you ever have deja vu, Mrs. Lancaster? And she says, I don't think so, but I could check with the kitchen. And I don't know why, but that made me laugh and laugh and laugh the first time I saw that film. So that's always what I think of. So there you go. I don't think so.
Think you'll see the groundhog? Think you'll see his shadow? Buongiorno!
And then, of course, Sonny and Cher. I mean,
got you, babe.
That's obvious, but yeah.
Well, as I arrived at the party, actually, I did say to the host, don't forget your booties because it's cold out there today.
Cold out there!
And he was not expecting that. He did not expect that reference. It took him a little bit
by
surprise.
Oh, that's good.
So,
that's funny.
It was good. And the funniest thing, actually, I have to share that happened all weekend was on the way to that party. My younger daughter was complaining she didn't want to go to the party. She's tired. She doesn't want to move. She's cranky. And then she says, Daddy, are we broke? And I said,
That came out of nowhere.
We're fine. If you have some anxiety around that, no, money's okay. You know, we're buying a house, but I think we're okay. And she says, no, Daddy, we broke.
As in Nintendo.
As in Nintendo Wii. Which is true. It is busted. And yeah, I was not prepared for that either. Anyway.
Which I guess would warrant the same question again as a follow-up to make sure you could afford to get it fixed.
That's right. Can we get a Wii U? do we have some money in the kitty for replacement consoles? but I was like, oh, you really have to work on the intonation there.
Yeah.
Emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yes.
Anyway.
Or so. Just start calling it the Nintendo, yeah, like I do, because I Nintendo. Always have the Nintendo. It's just a matter of which one I'm referring to at the time.
Which generation.
But, yeah, yes. But usually it's just the Nintendo, because initially that's all it was the Nintendo Entertainment System. So all we ever called it was the Nintendo, as in, Mom, you have to kick your husband off the Nintendo. I want to play. So, which was a conversation we had in my house more than once.
It's a conversation I think really happens in a lot of houses, but it's one of those things that happens behind closed doors where really, you know, nobody's quite prepared for it. But
yeah, and then but the reason it was funny was because like my mom was the only one who was like immune to Nintendo fever at our house. So, and we're turning this into another nostalgia show very rapidly.
Was she also immunized against Pac-Man fever? Because
she was, and I think it was the residual effects of that that made her immune to Nintendo.
She's immune to all sorts of video game maladies.
Yes.
She was immune to GameCube La Grippe.
Yes.
2600 malaise.
Dreamcast Air's disease. And for people playing along at home, we want to hear about your
German television measles.
We want to hear about your game console maladies. And honestly, the parts that are just Mike and I trying to crack each other up are my favorite parts of this entire show. So I apologize if this is where you're rolling your eyes as we make terrible jokes to each other. But I really, really enjoy it. Yeah. PlayStation Pox, that was a bad one. I've broken Mike.
I think unfortunately now I have the Pong cough.
Oh no, Pong SARS.
Pong SARS.
Oh no.
It's a takeoff on Pawn Stars, but it's a little, it didn't pitch quite as well. Pong SARS. Oh my gosh.
Kelly, it's just 20 minutes of you and Mike coughing and blowing your nose. I know, but we were playing Atari at the time. So, you know, Pong SARS.
Pong SARS. Yeah. Oh, goodness.
And now you know why we're a podcast and not a TV show. Because the pitch didn't go very well.
It's like, okay, it's video gamers, but they're dying of respiratory illnesses.
8-bit respiratory infection.
It's like, and the chiptune theme is just Mozart's Requiem done as a chiptune. It's very, just grim. Very grim. That's going to be our closing music this week, everybody. It's Mozart's Requiem chiptune. So
in a chiptune form.
We're Googling it right now. Stand by.
Right after we say, Buongiorno salami.
Oh boy.
Someday we'll tell you guys all the behind the scenes that's nowhere near as interesting as it should be. And I just want to get this out of the way because our last episode, we spent a bunch of time saying really nice stuff about about Javi. And because we go way back to the last episode, so I feel comfortable calling him that now, Javi. And he knows that he lives in a world that I also exist in, and I don't know how to process that information. So, hi, Javi. I hope you're listening to this one, too. And I hope you enjoyed the terrible console malady diversion we just had a moment ago. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So.
And also, hi, Chris Fuller, since I'm saying hello to people.
Hi, Chris Fuller. Hi to all our listeners.
Hello, listeners.
And this is not just console maladies. We also have iPhone fever.
We have actual stuff to talk about.
Actual stuff to talk about because within the past week, as we reckon time here on planet Earth, we've had a couple of our favorite megacorps report their earnings,
mm-hmm.
And one of them, formerly Stuffy, formerly largest corporation by market cap, is now not. As of today, or as of yesterday, I guess, not the biggest company in the world by market cap.
Yeah, it was like a week.
It was about a week. Yeah.
Yeah.
The former champion of the Hill, Apple, now has been passed by Alphabet, mm-hmm. the company formerly known as Print Symbol.
You know them as Google. That's right. They did spend a while as that symbol that Prince uses.
Oh my God! It'd be so great if Larry and Sergey came out and said, "We've decided to change the name again, ladies and gentlemen."
The new power generation.
Print Symbol and the new power generation.
That's really all I want to hear is that they're now going to call Google the new power generation. That would be amazing.
So Alphabet, the parent company of the Goog, mm-hmm. reported blowout earnings. Blew past.
I think we officially have to call them G Money now.
They are G Money, and they're you know obviously still the majority of their revenue comes from advertising. Mm-hmm. Everything else is kind of a rounding error for them. Not unlike Apple, where mm-hmm. it's the iPhone and the iPhonettes. And with Apple, the challenge is that that the iPhone is heading into, did not experience this quarter, but is likely to head into its first year over year shrink in right. terms of sales.
Which, you know, to listen to analysts has been about to happen. Let's see, if the iPhone's been out for 7 years now. For 7 years. Mm-hmm. So it was really just a question of time. It shouldn't surprise anyone. But I think that my opinion on this is that there are still going to be some very interesting numbers because we are still living, even though the carriers are trying really hard to get rid of them, we are still living in the world of the two-year contract.
This is true. So
there are still a lot of people who have to wait it out until March or until May and will finally get sprung from the contract they were on before so that they can move to an iPhone. And these are people who are happy with their carriers, aren't interested in changing, but aren't eligible for a phone for another 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. And so I think we're still going to see crazy upgrade numbers if you were to compare them to any other number except Apple's number last year.
True.
Like, you're going to get
the comparisons,
bonkers numbers.
The curve you're grading on is pretty steep. And the other thing
yes.
that's interesting to note, that is a good point, number one. Number two, Apple's year over year for this, what is a fiscal, which is the 2016 first quarter, which is the mm-hmm. holiday quarter
yes.
For Apple, ends the day after Christmas, ends Boxing Day, mm-hmm. which is interesting. So Apple had $75.9 billion of revenue and made $18.4 billion of net profit, so $3.28 per share. Mm-hmm. Only a smidge, approximately $1.3 billion, above the year-ago revenue results, and only $400 million above the year-ago income. Mm-hmm. But since there have been buybacks, the difference in share, in profit per share, or income per share, $3.28 versus $3.06. So mm-hmm. a big per share boost, not so big in terms of net. However, that is $75.9 billion of people giving Apple money for things,
yes.
and of which Apple kept almost $20 billion of that money. That is still all the monies. If you look at Google's quarter, Google had a killer quarter. Google blew it out.
Oh, yeah.
Google's revenue number, not income, not profit, revenue number, $21.3 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So Google's everything Google took in, not the profit, but every dollar it took in, is almost equivalent, only slightly surpasses the actual profit Apple made.
Right.
So still it's a fairly steep comparison. Google, because it doesn't have to worry about selling many physical things, although between
right.
the cars and the killer robots, that could change.
this is true.
There's less of a natural cap. There's mm-hmm. less of an addressable market cap for Google. And Google doesn't have to necessarily invent a new blockbuster product in order to grow.
Right.
Apple is fighting a very, very, very big... A very big successful thing. It's like
yes.
the old. It's like Marlon Brando in Don Juan DeMarco. It's like, yeah, okay, but he's still awesome. It's just
yeah.
you know, he's older now. Anyway,
Yeah.
That's perhaps an unfair comparison, both to Apple and Marlon Brando.
Marlon Brando. One of the things I thought was interesting is I always, I have a little Excel spreadsheet and I feed Apple's numbers into it. And I did this math, and it was the same math that David Sparks did and posted over on his blog. And I thought it was really interesting. And that was Apple sold 34,000 iPhones per hour.
Every hour, I can barely count 34,000 seconds.
Yeah, every hour of every day of that quarter, that is a crazy number, because that means just to keep up with that number, they are building and shipping and activating over 800,000 iPhones every single day. Every day for three solid months.
And keeping in mind those factories take a break for the Lunar New Year. So
yeah,
they've got to build more than those to make up for the 2 weeks everybody takes off.
Right. And the reason that this to me was something that was notable was because David thought that through and got to 816,000 iPhones have to be made a day to be at that number, which means they're probably making more than that a day so that Apple stores have them and you can just walk in and get one. AT&T stores, Best Buy, like they live on shelves in some places. So in order to have any on a shelf, you have to make more than 816,000 every single day. And to me, this is a thing that I think doesn't get anywhere near the attention that it should when people talk about giant companies. And that is Apple makes stuff. You know, people complain about iOS, people complain about macOS, people complain about Apple Music and whatever else it is that they complain about. But Apple is like the peak of manufacturing efficiency at this point, in my opinion. And like, in order to be able to execute on that for one day is impressive. To do it for three straight months and to do it at a level that is higher than that, because again, there are phones on shelves, to me is even more impressive. So I just want to, like, that's always sort of a thing I think gets lost when people talk about, is this the end of Apple because they only made almost all the money? And when people talk about how eventually, like, the iPhone is going to mature enough that not everybody's going to feel like they need to upgrade the second their contract is up, or the iPad turns out to have a longer upgrade cycle, but nobody ever really had one until 5 years ago, so we didn't really know what that cycle was going to look like. And now that it's reasonably feature mature, it's got basic stuff like a solid operating system. It's got a camera so you can talk to people. It's got Touch ID just like your phone does, so that now you can do everything with your thumb or whatever. When people talk about that stuff sort of being, you know, the tragedy of Apple, I think that this is a thing that gets missed every single time, which is that the manufacturing practices and the manufacturing expertise that Apple has just in making stuff, whatever the stuff may be, is just mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, the sheer quantity of stuffage that has to be manufactured, and Apple has mastered it. And this goes back to the supply chain genius of Tim Cook and what it means to have somebody who really understands Apple's supply and logistics in charge of the company.
That's where he came from before. Right. That was what he was working on, was the mechanics of how do you build a million iPhones, you know, how do you build half a million iPhones a day, which is probably what they were having to do at one point. And in order to be that company, that was the thing that Tim Cook was working on. And that was what he did for a long time at Apple, was basically whip every single supply chain into shape. And there's a long and complicated reason why I know a bunch of stuff about manufacturing practices and how that kind of stuff works and what sort of efficiency you need to have. So I actually have a slightly informed appreciation for this. And it is because I actually know the kind of stuff that goes into how you turn a factory into something that can execute on this kind of level. And it just blows my mind.
It is mind-blowing, and it has never been done before.
Right.
There isn't really a parallel in the history of manufacturing.
Right. Nobody makes a million cars a day.
Where would we put them all?
That too. Nobody makes a million anything a day. Like, I can't think of another anything. And I'm not trying to be facetious about this. I honestly can't think of another. Like, I was talking about this on Daily Observations right after the earnings call. And I think John Martellaro said paperclips. Like, maybe there's a company that manufactures a million paperclips a day. And yeah, I said, you know, probably. Maybe. But, you know, that... You know, look at the amount of technology in a paperclip versus in an iPhone, and you could kind of see where maybe this is a thing that I really want more people to be talking about. I wish that this was the kind of thing where, like, people sent their manufacturing gurus off to Apple to learn what it is to have this kind of just-in-time management, this kind of supply chain management, and how tight you have to keep an eye on all of that stuff, how closely you have to be watching all of those things. So... during Apple's week as the biggest company in the history of companies, this was a thing that I just kept turning over and over in my mind was, you know, 800,000 iPhones a day. And I can't think of anybody who makes 800,000 anything a day, for a sustained period of time.
I mean, I was going to say something inappropriate. I'm not even going to do that now.
That's too bad.
It is an astonishing feat. And to have a market for those to predict, to forecast, to get the raw materials, to get the parts, to get the components, get the suppliers lined up, create in many cases parts, components, capabilities that have never existed before.
Right.
Like you have to make 800,000 Touch ID sensors. A year ago, we didn't know how to make one.
Yeah, 800,000 what?
Yeah. Oh. You have to make 3D touch screens. And, you know, 2 years ago... We didn't know... the total number that existed could fit on a table in Johnny Ive's studio. And
right.
Now we have to make them... Someone has to make them at scale. Someone has to make them at a ridiculous scale. And the kind of pressure Apple puts on its suppliers, the kind of Darwinian nature red in tooth and claw fight that is constantly going on...
Yeah.
With people and you know, people who in companies that invest in manufacturing capacity, invest in capabilities, only to have to sort of shake it up and turn it around. That's the dark side of it. The light side of it is you look at companies like Corning, which have experienced a renaissance on the smartphone market in general and the iPhone in particular, and are able to create jobs in upstate New York and in Kentucky and making Gorilla Glass and making hardened glass as a component for these phones. It is impressive. It is astonishing. But the question is, if we've hit peak iPhone, if you can only make $65 billion, if you can only sell $60 or $65 billion worth of these things in a quarter, which, mm-hmm. Ermagerd, all the monies.
Yes.
But if you can only sell so many of them and you've reached a point of now, as you said, getting a sense of what the actual real replacement cycle is versus the carrier, the partially contract-induced replacement cycle, what does that mean for Apple in the next year, 2 years? Now, of course, Apple is at, you know, something like 12x... of the Microsoft rule, which was, I think it was Ballmer, I don't know if it was Ballmer or Bill Gates, or maybe it was Andy Grove, I think it might have been Andy Grove at Intel, who originally said you need enough cash on hand to run the business for a year with no revenue.
Right.
To face the winds of innovation, you need to be able to do that. Apple has enough cash, particularly if they were to move their headquarters, say, to the Cayman Islands, but they have enough cash to run the business essentially in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
They can go a decade or longer at the size they are now, paying the people they have now, without having to stop doing anything and not sell anything. So when people are looking at, for example, a car or a virtual reality system or something else and saying, well, could any of these be the iPhone blockbuster? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This company, right. The company can continue to innovate at scale with a ridiculous amount of cash on hand. I don't know what the raw burn rate of Apple is, but it can't be, you know, if you're not trying to actually make anything, it can't be more than a few billion dollars a year.
Right.
So, I don't know. I would have to do the math on it. But basically, there's no reason to panic. I think Farhad Manjoo in the Times had a good piece about this. There's no reason to panic. Apple's going to be fine. It may be a somewhat smaller Apple at some point, or it may be an Apple that doesn't make all the money. Mm-hmm. But there are still going to be iPhones. There's still going to be iPads. There's still going to be Macs. And there will be awesome new stuff.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, rant over. How about that Alphabet?
I think what was really interesting to me was that there was a lot more conversation about it because we didn't really used to hear about, you know, anybody else's earnings. You know, you would only hear about them like in comparison, you know, all of Microsoft last quarter, like this is a thing I've actually said to people. All of Microsoft last quarter didn't do as well as just the iPhone for Apple. Yeah. Not all of Apple, just the iPhone or just the iPad. Or if you compare just their computers to, you know, just, you know, any maker's PCs, any, you know, whatever Dell did last quarter to whatever Apple did last quarter, desktop to desktop, like, mm-hmm. even just that, like, it's very interesting to see how those conversations sort of evolve. And so to me, it was actually sort of refreshing to hear people like waving their hands over a stock price that wasn't Apple stock price or earnings report or whatever. Because, you know, we never really get any actual information out of Amazon. So it's funny to me to hear people having similar conversations about other stuff. And part of that is because I have often wondered how well informed the people are who are declaring Apple doomed, and if they are that well informed about all the other stuff that they tell people. So it's been kind of nice, actually, to not have to talk people off the ledge after hearing on the TV that somebody was doomed. Because that's been the interesting thing about this, is that nobody's saying, oh, Google didn't make all the money, only almost all. They better close the doors.
Shut it down.
Shut it all down.
Give it back to the shareholders. Sell it off and give the money back to the shareholders. CC Michael Dell. What Farhad Manjoo pointed out in his piece is that Apple earned $18.4 billion in profit, which was the most profitable quarter of any company in the history of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple's $154 billion in iPhone annual revenue is larger than the gross domestic product of 2/3 of the world's countries.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a thing that has gravity and momentum well beyond, you know, a quarter's results.
Right.
Whether this is a localized peak or a permanent peak, it doesn't really matter. Now, you could look at what happened to BlackBerry and say, oh, you know, the iPhone is one innovation away from, you know, from being rimmed.
Yes.
I can't believe I just said that.
I was really trying to ignore it, and I couldn't get there.
One misstep, and there goes your family-friendly badge. The Canadian experience may be waiting out there for Apple, but that misunderstands the role of the iPhone. It is not a particular flavor of smartphone in a universe of no good choices.
Right.
It is the best choice, and it is the most powerful ecosystem in a world of pretty good choices.
Right. So. And that was not the case when your options were BlackBerry or not.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was really it. And a lot of people, you know, because of that, a lot of people, you know, ended up on a BlackBerry and got sort of used to that experience. And there was a certain amount of inertia, you know, when the iPhone did come out, there was a certain percentage of those folks that were like, yeah, but I have a BlackBerry and I like it. Why would I change? And it's because everybody at that point had sort of been trained to choose the least bad option, not the good one, just the one that wasn't quite as bad as all the others.
Yeah.
There was no good. There was only less bad. And so, it was like trying to pick a mobile provider today. And so it's the same sort of thing. Like, you just sort of, you know, at that point in 2005, 2006, 2007, because we didn't get the iPhone until halfway through it, even though we saw it in January. There weren't a lot of good choices. It was like, which one sucks least? Which one will actually fit in your pocket? And the thing that is hilarious to me to this day is all of the howler monkey howling about how Apple had to build something with a bigger screen, had to make something with a bigger screen. How could anyone think that an iPhone 5 was enough screen? I mean, honestly. And I remember in 2007 when that first phone came out and everyone went, oh my God, how does Apple expect anyone to carry around a phone that huge? How on earth are people going to carry around this ginormous phone? And you look at it now and you're like, who's a cute little iPhone? Yes, you are. And it is just, I mean, the ADD of technology writers is sometimes astounding to me. And that's like my favorite example of that. You know, I think, you know, we all know it's not going away. We all know it's getting better. And one of the things that I have actually enjoyed is watching the Android ecosystem evolve, because once the Android ecosystem becomes polished in ways that iOS is polished, allows for a lot of things to interact with each other the way you can do things on iOS. And once that stuff becomes a really viable alternative, and I think we're basically there or close to it, I think forcing Apple to compete is always going to be the fun thing for me to watch. And I know that's not why Apple does anything, but it's a lot of fun to see Apple sort of have to up their game instead of just kind of sitting around and going, you know what would be great? If you could just right click, but on your phone, and having people go, whoa. And instead having a polished alternative out there that allows you to do all of the things that your iPhone can do, and really causing them to drive that innovation and lean on it a little harder and make it something truly great instead of just something that they think would be nifty, is a lot of fun. And Mike, you remember that from like probably one of the first times I was ever on the Tua Talkcast was like about the time of Windows 7. And I was like pulling for it. I hope Windows 7 is awesome. I want it to be great, because
I was just thinking of that.
Mac OS will have to compete. And then where will we be? And I'm enjoying that on the mobile side.
I remember that very clearly, and you were, it was a contrarian point of view.
It totally
You're
was.
Like, I want to put this out there that I think it is, I hope Windows 7 is awesome. And everyone else said, keep on burning, Crazy Diamond. And we were like, we're all right here behind you. Don't anybody tell Callie how crazy she is.
Yeah, because like you could, and it made for a riveting podcast, I'm sure, because I said, I want it to be great, and you could hear a pin drop. Even on TalkShoe, you could hear a pin drop.
You beat me to it by a fraction of a second. Skype lag. It's like you could hear a pin drop, and in my head, I'm thinking, yeah, on TalkShoe, you could never hear a pin drop, and it didn't quite get out of my mouth.
Oh,
burn.
And it was... And I remember saying that it was because competition. Like, I love seeing what Apple does, you know, that they think this would be great or this might be kind of nifty, but I want to see what they can do when they really have to compete with a viable alternative. And I think we're starting to see that on the mobile side. I think we're starting to see it on the Windows side with Windows 10 and what kind of stuff they're doing with the computers that are like kind of a tablet, but kind of not, but like Windows 10 sort of got a lot of that together, and it's got a lot more polish and it's a lot more usable. And I'm interested. I really want to see this be a thing where, like, now that everybody knows that, you know, now that everybody has listened to all of us who have been saying it for the last however many hundreds of years, that Apple makes great stuff and it is easy to use and it is really approachable and it is something that you can integrate as like part of your life. You know, if you need to have technology in your life, Apple's a good way to go because you don't have to have all the hassle of like having technology. You just sort of have it and it just does what you need it to do. And now that enough people have come around to that point of view, it's sort of like Apple, you know, we sort of got Apple 2.0 when Steve came back, and then we got 3.0 when Tim took the reins, and now we need 4.0 to actually compete against Android, to compete against Windows, to compete against all of the other things that are out there that are really starting to become viable alternatives. And I think that those alternatives are being fueled by the competition they have from Apple. Like, we have to do as good as Apple is doing. And we have to have great features. We have to have polish. We have to have a solid operating system. We have to have good functionality. And it's great for everybody when that happens.
It's certainly great for consumers. Don't forget that if we're talking about 4.0s, Windows 4.0 was Windows 2000. or possibly Windows 98. 3.1, 98. Yeah, it was probably
NT4. Because there was an NT 4.0.
NT4. Oh, NT4. Yeah. We're all still paying for the architectural decisions of NT4. Still today, every time we use an ATM and every time somebody says, can you please send me an 8.3 file name? Anywho. Well, we have had a fun time positing strange diseases you can catch from your video game consoles and talking about the Goliaths and behemoths of the technology world. We will be back in a couple of weeks, as we usually are. But before we go, Kelly, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso, and you can occasionally find me over at macobserver.com or on the British Tech Network. And I am the guest on the second season kickoff of the Homework podcast over on 5x5 with Dave Kalo.
Nice. Very, very nice. You can find me on the Twitters at Mike T. Rose. You can find our show at aftershowpodcast.com on Twitter at @the_aftershow. Shout out this week. First of all, do send in your game console maladies.
I really want to know.
In another contest that no one will follow up on. But shout out this week to somebody who is doing the Lord's work. If you have not yet encountered the Twitter account called Bat Labels. if you have not yet encountered it, it is run by a friend of the site, as we used to say, friend of the Tua site, Aaron Reynolds. And Aaron has come up with, basically, he is screenshotting the entire 1960s Batman series whenever there is a label in the shot.
Oh my gosh.
And because they labeled everything in this show, and he just decided, I have to share this. So he now has created his Tumblr and Twitter account, and they're brilliant. They're just hilarious. They're awesome. They're insightful. They're philosophical. They're delightful. And at the moment, if you go to either the Tumblr, which is batlabels.tumblr.com, or the Twitter account, which is @batlabels, you will see that they have a product, their first piece of merch, in a collaboration with cottonbureau.com. And these are t-shirts, black t-shirts with white lettering that say henchmen. So if you're in need of a Halloween costume and you have three friends and someone who is willing to dress as the Riddler, you're good to go.
So you need five friends because there's four henchmen. there's five in an entourage, and then you need the villain.
I'm going to wear this with my wife for Halloween, except my shirt will say henchman and her shirt will say rabbi. And we'll just leave them all guessing. They will not know what to do. So, do check out Bat
Labels. Now I'm having the mental image of Javier Grill Marx watched creating a new title that is Rabbi Henchman and like the adventures of Rabbi Henchman. And oh my God. And it's like the best thing. Okay. Sorry.
He brought you the middleman. Now he brings you the Mendelman. we need a low pass filter to just take out all the giggling. It's awful. This is awful. Well, we have been.
You did this.
I did this to you. I'm so sorry. All right, folks, we'll leave you with the lovely chiptuned version of Mozart's Requiem. We will be back in a couple weeks for my colleague in nitrous oxide, Ms. Kelly Guimont. I'm Mike Rose, and we will see you soon.